Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Democrats say the Florida bill aimed at violent protests is racist, and they're preparing to take the issue to court.
I listened to my colleagues as they spoke, and they said that, you know, they don't have a racist bone in their body. But I tell you this, if you say that, it has to line up with your actions.
Also tonight, three controversial Florida highway proposals have hit a serious roadblock.
Would have gone through some of the most environmentally sensitive areas in Florida.
We'll also tell you what so far unresolved issue could drive lawmakers into a special session, and we'll learn about the pressure being placed on the governor to schedule a special election. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the end of week 7 of the 9-week Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. Florida Democrats are calling out legislative Republicans' defense of a bill that aims to crack down on violent protests. The measure was first announced by Governor Ron DeSantis in September, following a summer of protests fueled by the death of George Floyd. The bill is now on its way to the governor's desk after a heated and emotional debate on the Senate floor. As Lynn Hatter reports, Democrats and activists are now looking at their next moves.
DeSantis announced the proposal at a September press conference, flanked by Republican legislative leaders and law enforcement officers.
I think we need to do more in terms of having a strong legislative response so that we do not always have to play whack-a-mole anytime you have situations like this develop. And so I'm proud today to be able to announce what will be a focal point of the next legislative session.
The announcement followed social justice protests in Florida and across the country after the deaths of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd. It also came amid a presidential campaign, with former President Donald Trump using the protests to highlight what he described as a need for law and order. Fort Lauderdale Senator Perry Thurston says HB 1 is a result of that.
Started with President Trump calling the governors across the nation weak and losers and saying that they are going to be ran over if they don't put an end to the Black Lives Matter movement. That's in September. HB 1 is a result of that call and our governor jumping to whatever the president asked him to do. He was his do-boy, and now we've got HB 1, and all the people of the state of Florida have to live with that.
DeSantis' protest bill was initially met with lukewarm support by even Republicans. Then January 6th happened. The insurrection at the United States Capitol breathed life into the proposal. Miami Gardens Democratic Senator Chevron Jones says the insurrection gave DeSantis and legislative Republicans an opportunity to reframe the conversation around the bill in a way Democrats don't buy.
He can't put this off on the January 6th insurrection. The only thing he could put this off on is that he came up with this bill when he saw people out protesting for George Floyd and the death of George Floyd, and what constantly continues to happen within the Black community.
The bill's origins, says Jones, cannot and should not be overlooked.
I listened to my colleagues as they spoke, and they said that, you know, they don't have a racist bone in their body, and that they understand that Senator Burgess doesn't have any racist intent. But I tell you this, if you say that, it has to line up with your actions. And their actions didn't line up with that today. Because at its core, House Bill 1 is racist at its core.
Following the Senate's vote, the chamber's president, Wilton Simpson, described the debate as lively. Democrats are already floating the possibility of lawsuits. Simpson says he's not that concerned.
I think this bill was very well debated today. I think the Senate was very respectful, as you saw that debate go on, very collegial. And I think that I was very proud of how collegial the Senate was. And you heard a lot of emotional debate on that bill today. And I think it was well done, and obviously I was supportive of that bill, and I think it's a good bill for the state of Florida.
The bill increases penalties for crimes committed during protests and creates some new ones like mob intimidation, cyber intimidation, commonly called doxing, and the destruction of monuments and historical properties. The bill also creates procedures to contest local decisions that result in budget cuts to police departments. DeSantis has said he will sign the bill when it reaches his desk. It would become law immediately upon his signature. I'm Len Hatter.
A proposal to repeal three controversial toll roads is heading to the Florida House for a vote. The repeal has already been approved by the state Senate. Robbie Gaffney reports the bill still contains projects to extend U.S. Route 19 and the Florida Turnpike. That has environmentalists concerned.
In 2019, Governor Ron DeSantis signed into law a program that would build three new toll roads. They would connect Citrus to Jefferson County, Collier to Polk County, and extend the Florida Turnpike northwest of the Suncoast Parkway. Due to budget restraints caused by the coronavirus pandemic, lawmakers have been rethinking that plan. Stewart Republican Senator Gail Harrell is one of them.
One of the things that I really believe that is both a policy and a budget issue is MCORS. And while the goals of the MCORS legislation was bold and really forethinking, we need to really look at the long-term and short-term goals and priorities of the state of Florida.
Harrell's repeal bill would still pave the way for other roadway projects, such as connecting I-10 in Madison County to U.S. 19 in the Suncoast Parkway. It would also extend the Florida Turnpike as determined by the Florida Department of Transportation. Audubon Florida's Beth Alvey is in support of Harrell's bill after an amendment made it so that the Florida Department of Transportation would have to take into consideration guidance and recommendations from task forces that evaluated the MCORS project.
So when the task forces were meeting much of last year, looking at how these the areas where these toll roads may need to go in, they came up with really protective language that DOT and the Turnpike Authority would need to follow if these roads were ever built.
Alvey says that includes avoiding certain sensitive areas like spring sheds, wetlands, and coastal lands that may be impacted by sea level rise.
It also said that, allow for provisions of robust wildlife crossings where roads would intersect with important wildlife corridors. And all of these things, the task DOT would need to follow to the greatest or maximum extent practicable.
The amendment was also supported by the advocacy group 1000 Friends of Florida. Its president, Paul Owens, served on one of the MCORS task forces.
The MCORS highways, as originally authorized a couple of years ago, would have gone through some of the most environmentally sensitive areas in Florida. For the southwest to central road, that was going straight through panther habitat.
But Owen says now Harrell's bill is a step in the right direction.
There seems to be an emphasis in this bill on upgrading existing highways rather than moving into undeveloped land, open land, so-called green fields. So the potential negative impact is less probably from this approach, but it's still something to be very aware of and try to guard against.
Both Owens and Alvey hope if the bill passes, the Florida Department of Transportation will follow the task force recommendations closely. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
Still to come on Capitol Report, supporters of a bill to educate parents about the sex education being taught in Florida's public schools say local school districts will ignore it at their peril.
I'll take it a step further. If there's school board members that are getting in the way, let's talk about them. Let's run a campaign against them.
A gambling agreement could be coming this year, but it might not happen this session.
We're in a reasonable place that a compact could get finished sometime this year. Maybe in the next week or two, maybe in a special session.
And we'll go on a trek through Florida's ever-diminishing wilderness in search of the elusive and endangered Florida panther.
That wildlife corridor that we've experienced is literally the lifeline for the panther to recover and reclaim its historic territory further to the north.
A bill that would require school districts to provide extra notice to parents of their ability to opt out of sex education classes for their children is advancing in the Florida House. The bill's original language would have required parents to opt in to classes that teach about sexual health. Valerie Crowder reports some parents and religious leaders spoke out against the change before it passed its last committee stop.
The original sex education bill introduced in the Florida House would have required parents to provide written consent before their children could learn about sexual health at school. The bill's sponsor recently changed the proposal to require notification of parents' ability to opt out instead, due to uncertainty about the bill's likelihood of passing in the state Senate. Keith Flau is with the Florida Citizens Alliance. The organization helped draft the original bill, which contained the opt-in requirement.
This bill is now turned totally into an opt-out. And again, that puts government in control. That puts the school districts in control. And it puts the parent having to defend themselves if the school bothers to tell them.
State statute already gives parents the opportunity to opt out of sex education classes for their children, but the new proposed legislation would require school districts to notify them of this option. Right now, they don't have to do that. Republican State Representative Alex Andrade of Pensacola said that's why conservative religious groups' opposition confused him.
This bill does nothing to expand, change, alter the curriculum that y'all all had issues with. And if you actually look at the statute and read the proposed bill, you have the potential ability right now to exclude your child, to pull your child out of one of these programs, but there's no reliable mechanism for you to be fully informed about what your child is learning until this bill passes.
Andrade was among most of the committee's members voting in support of the new measure. Many conservative members of the House Education and Employment Committee said they agreed with the bill's opponents on the issue of opting in, but they maintained the new bill is better than keeping the law the way it stands today. GOP State Representative Joe Harding of Williston explained he agrees with almost every speaker philosophically.
I will second what some of my colleagues have said. At the end of the day, opt-in is ideally for me I support that idea. But there's one part of this bill we didn't really even talk about. And that's I brought it up in question because I wanted to make sure we heard it. But the public meeting with the school board, and that they have to notify and do a public meeting.
The bill would require school districts to hold a public meeting before making any changes to sex education curriculum. It would also require them to publish on their website a link to all of the instructional materials provided in sex education class. Harding urged those who spoke against the Republican-sponsored proposal to take action against local school boards that fail to comply with the law. He said he'd be happy to serve as a link between them and officials at the Florida Department of Education.
I also agree with my colleagues that there's school boards that are bad actors and school districts that are bad districts. So I would challenge those that spoke, give me the list, and I would be happy to take this on and talk to DOE. And I'll take it a step further. If there's school board members that are getting in the way, let's talk about them. Let's run a campaign against them.
Conservative committee members weren't able to sway public opponents who expressed doubt that school boards would comply with the new legislation if it passes. Krista Rogan is with the Christian Family Coalition. Rogan says she was appalled to learn her son had been enrolled in sex education class without her knowledge.
My son went through public education and went through a sex education class. And I didn't get, the notice that was supposed to come home to sign to opt him out. The material, it was sixth grade, the material was too much.
The House version of the bill now matches a bill moving through the state Senate. Neither have yet been taken up for a vote. I'm Valerie Crowder.
As Florida enters the final weeks of the state legislative session, Senate President Wilton Simpson says there could still be time to finalize a gambling agreement with the Seminole Indian tribe and pass gaming legislation that would create a new gambling oversight commission. But if there's not, Simpson says he foresees the possibility of a special session. Regan McCarthy has more.
Senate President Wilton Simpson has been helping to guide discussions on a potential new Seminole gambling agreement called a compact for the past 3 years. He says he's hopeful this is the year a deal could get approved.
We're in a reasonable place that a compact could get finished sometime this year. maybe in the next week or two, maybe in a special session. And I'm not pushing that off. I just think these are very complex issues and it takes a while. I believe we are engaged properly to try to get that completed.
A new gambling agreement with the tribe would mean Seminole casinos could offer more kinds of games like craps or roulette. It would also mean the tribe would resume making revenue sharing payments to the state in exchange for exclusive rights to offer those games. Simpson also has his eye on a group of gambling bills that recently got their first committee hearings.
You know, maybe we'll get those things done this session, the bills you've seen proposed. And if not, clearly they would be taken up if we do a special session. If we get a compact, then that would be taken up at that time, perhaps.
Spring Hill Republican Representative Blaise Ngolia chairs the Commerce Committee, where the bills got their first House hearing. He says the measures moving through the legislature now are largely vehicles for future gambling legislation to come this session.
Keep in mind that this is the framework for gaming going forward. These bills will most likely change.
But Simpson says the measures tackle important issues, including a gaming commission that he says will be an important part of controlling gambling in the years to come. Lawmakers are also discussing a plan that would allow most paramutuals to decouple, meaning horse tracks and high life frontons could keep operating slot machines and card rooms without having to hold life races or games. Under the current plan, thoroughbred tracks would still be required to hold live events. That's raised concerns for thoroughbred track owners who say they're happy to keep holding races, but are concerned the move puts them on an uneven playing field. Mike Rogers works for the Stronach Group, which owns Gulfstream Park in Hollandale Beach.
Horsemen and breeders are very dependent on slot revenues for thoroughbred racing purses. The impact of decoupling would be significant to the paramutual and casino profits. We therefore believe there should be a price for decoupling, as permit holders were granted cards and slots originally to help grow and protect live paramutual racing and maximize the economic impact on the state's racing and breeding infrastructure.
Rogers says he doesn't want thoroughbred tracks to decouple, but he says he'd like to see other paramutuals that choose to decouple to pay into a purse that could be used to support live racing throughout the state. Meanwhile, the standardbred horse industry is pushing against plans to allow the state's single track with a harness racing permit to decouple. Lauren Jackson with the Florida Standardbred Breeders and Owners Association says that could hurt families and businesses that depend on harness racing for their livelihood.
Approximately 5,000 people are directly employed in the state of Florida between standardbred breeding and racing. This includes drivers, owners, breeders, and trainers. Thousands more Floridians derive indirect income from the industry, including veterinarians, blacksmiths, groomers, supply shops, truckers.
Moving forward with decoupling would allow tracks to continue holding live events if they choose to, but many worry tracks wouldn't opt for that since hosting races is expensive and less lucrative than operating card rooms and slot machines. I'm Regan McCarthy.
10 days have passed since the death of longtime Florida Congressman Alcee Hastings. He died April 6th at the age of 84. By law, Governor Ron DeSantis must call a special election so voters can choose a replacement for Hastings. But nothing is happening yet. Steve Busquet reports that other members of Congress are now accusing DeSantis of playing politics.
State law says the governor shall call a special election for Congress when a vacancy occurs, but the law doesn't say when. Four Democrats in Florida's congressional delegation on Friday urged DeSantis to call the election immediately. If he doesn't, they said, it's proof that he's playing partisan politics by holding out and denying House Speaker Nancy Pelosi another vote on Capitol Hill. Congresswoman Lois Frankel is from West Palm Beach.
And we are urging him to do so immediately, put politics aside, no game playing, and let's get an election on the way.
Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz of Weston said it's wrong that Hastings District has no voice when important spending decisions are being made in D.C.
I serve as a subcommittee chair on the Appropriations Committee, and I can tell you that so many of Congressman Hastings District's priorities are going to be at stake right now over the next few months in that crucial budget process. Without a member representing Florida's 20th district, The district could potentially lose its opportunity to provide crucial input into the budget. So there's no good reason, none whatsoever, to wait one more day to replace the giant shoes that Alfie Hastings left behind. Unless, of course, you want to play petty partisan politics or have no regard for your own state's constituents.
Holding an election will take months to allow for a candidate qualifying period, a primary and general election in two of the largest counties in the state, Broward and Palm Beach. Hastings' 20th congressional district includes large areas of Greater Fort Lauderdale and West Palm Beach that are home to many black and brown voters. The last time a member of Congress from Florida died in office was 8 years ago. A special election was quickly called 2 weeks later to replace Republican C.W. Bill Young. I'm Steve Bosquet.
We look ahead to legislative action for the upcoming week. Here's Gina Jordan.
Here's a look at what's coming up Monday in the Florida legislature. State law may be amended to recognize that domestic violence is a significant public health threat to Florida families. A proposal would require certified domestic violence centers to obtain public and private funding equal to at least 25% of what the center receives from the Domestic Violence Trust Fund. The centers would be allowed to carry some unspent funding forward to the next fiscal year. The bill also authorizes the Department of Children and Families to certify and monitor batterers' intervention programs. Parents may soon be able to legally surrender their newborns up to 1 month old by placing them in so-called baby boxes instead of handing them directly to a firefighter, paramedic, or other emergency personnel. The State Office of Minority Health is working to eliminate health disparities. Additional duties for the office may include increased access and better quality of health care services for racial and ethnic minority populations. A 5-member Gaming Control Commission may be created to oversee gambling operations in Florida. Insurance and operational requirements are proposed for peer-to-peer car-sharing programs. And finally, the Senate Ethics and Elections Committee will meet to discuss a list of confirmations. They include a string of university trustees and 2 appointees to the State Board of Education. Also on the list is the appointment of Siobhan Harris as Secretary of the Department of Children and Families. That's some of what's happening Monday at the Capitol. I'm Gina Jordan.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, Florida has many iconic wildlife species, but the future of one in particular remains an open question. 2 more endangered Florida panthers died this week after being struck by vehicles. Their deaths highlight a problem as well as a success story. A panther population reduced to a couple dozen now has reached more than 200. Their plight and progress is featured in April's National Geographic magazine. From WUSF in Tampa, Steve Newborn traveled to an area northeast of Fort Myers to meet up with the photographer and panther biologist featured in the article.
Our path to find the panther begins at Fish Eating Creek, a narrow ribbon of preserved land just west of Lake Okeechobee. Brian Kelly, a panther biologist for the state of Florida, opens the creaking gate. It leads us from trucks rumbling by on U.S. Highway 27 to a world of towering oaks and cypress heads. It's just north of a river that for decades had been the edge of panther country.
Fish Eating Creek Wildlife Management Area. This is the current northern frontier of the panther breeding range. So we've gotten female panther activity here recently, which is big news for panthers north of the Coosatchee River.
The sounds of the big trucks fade as we walk down a dirt path. A couple of hundred yards in, Kelly bends down to unlock a camouflaged camera bolted to a cypress tree. He checks to see the frames taken since his last visit.
Rabbit, oh no, possum.
Hiker, deer, law enforcement.
No panthers, nope.
They're only 5 days.
Yeah, only 5 days. The last time I checked it, it had a panther. This particular camera usually will get a panther once a month.
Recently, the first female panther was spotted north of the Caloosahatchee River in 43 years. But this progress will be for naught if money is not found to preserve a continuous path for them to migrate. That's because every day, 1,000 people move to Florida, and much of what used to be panther territory is being carved up by subdivisions to house the surging human population. Historically, the state has allocated $300 million a year for land preservation, but this year only $50 million are being proposed. That money could be used to conserve land or build highway underpasses along migration corridors. In 2018, 26 cats were killed by vehicles. 9 have been killed by cars and trucks this year alone. That's where Carlton Ward Jr. comes in. Traffic roars overhead as Ward climbs under State Road 80. There, he inspects an infrared camera trap that produced one of the most striking images in the National Geographic article, a lone cat walking under the overpass, its stealthy profile reflected in a still creek. Ward, a nature photographer from Tampa, has spent the last 5 years setting camera traps knee-deep in southwest Florida's swamps. He estimates it took 2 years to produce each photo in the magazine.
To capture an image of a panther walking through some of these places might happen every 1 or 2 months, but then to get it with some level of daylight that gives that depth and beauty to the surrounding landscape, that only happens a few times a year.
In 2012, Ward led the first of 2,000-mile treks across Florida through here to publicize the need to preserve wildlife corridors. Ward said the continued success of the panther hinges on what they'll find as they move north.
Now, to look at that from the panther's perspective, with the breeding population of panthers still isolated to the southern portion of our state, that wildlife corridor that we've experienced is literally the lifeline for the panther to recover and reclaim its historic territory further to the north.
Its historic territory used to be the entire southeast, but they were hunted so relentlessly that by the 1970s, only a handful were left in the swamps west of the Everglades. In 1972, a cougar hunter from Texas tracked down one underfed female panther, and it was discovered that interbreeding was hampering their ability to reproduce. 23 years later, state legislators supported a plan for him to bring in 8 female pumas from West Texas. What had once been fewer than 20 panthers now have rebounded to more than 200.
This is a conservation success story that belongs to Florida and Floridians, and this can be a real model of nature and people working together.
Whether that model can last in the face of development and political efforts to reduce the investment in preserving these lands will ultimately determine the fate of the cat the Cherokee called Lord of the Forest. I'm Steve Newborn in Tampa.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Valerie Crowder, Robbie Gaffney, Blaise Ganey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to Steve Busquet and Steve Newborn. Technical assistance for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Please join us every evening at this time throughout the 2021 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Florida State University, ranked in the top 20 among national public universities in the latest U.S. News & World Report. FSU specialty license plates support scholarships for deserving students. More on FSU specialty plates is at fsu.edu/mytag.